You're listening to IsraelScene.com.
And you're listening to IsraelScene.com.
Listening to IsraelScene.com.
Seen through the eyes of Steve, that's myself.
And you're on.
Two characters passionate about everything that happens in Israel.
IsraelScene.com.
IsraelScene.com.
You're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram.
You found your way over to the Shalit demonstration, Gilad Shalit, who was kidnapped by Hamas terrorists near Gaza and taken captive for almost over 1,000 days now. And there was a unique demonstration, though. There was that Shalit and family were petitioning or demonstrating that the government do everything in its power to get him home as quickly as possible, and if necessary, release as many prisoners as necessary in order to get him to come home alive. But on the other hand, there were a group of people who were totally sympathetic with that and were actually, from what I gather, praying for his release, but at the same time, not at the risk of releasing those prisoners who have blood on their hands and who will ultimately make it more difficult, God forbid, the next time there are prisoners, demands that will actually threaten the integrity of Israel for a variety of different reasons, is not acceptable, with the same time being totally sympathetic to the family of Gilad Shalit. You want him to be released. At the same time, are we willing to release everyone that Hamas wants that actually will come back and haunt us later on, which we have done in the past, and which the prisoners that we released have come back to haunt us, additional terrorist attacks and so forth. As a parent, I also can understand fully that I would want the government to do everything in my power, in their power, to get the job done. And his fault that he was kidnapped, but it was a circumstance that really the army has to be responsible for. And as a result, then they have to undo the damage that essentially they did by not protecting him or the situation or the circumstance to the best of their ability. With that said, however, I can also understand, being a citizen of the country, if we capitulate with the terrorists, then they know full well that every time something like this happens, including dead bodies, that we will give them pretty much what they want. And so they're always, what their first act is always to try to kidnap somebody, because it's worth more to them than any kind of confrontation with Israel. So what's your take?
It's really a no-winner. The idea of releasing, in this case, over 400 prisoners, all of whom have been accused, tried, and found guilty of engaging in murderous activity against Israel and Israelis and Jewish people, and for that matter, Israeli Arabs as well, most of whom also promised to continue, should they be released, to go back to their old ways, is a profound loser. It also doesn't work as much of a deterrent. I mean, if you know that you can go out and kill people and you can do whatever you want and they'll put you in jail, and then in a relatively short period of time, they're going to come along and your friends are going to kidnap somebody and then demand your release and you'll get out, it makes a real mockery of the whole idea of a justice system and of a trial and a sentencing and so on. And the flip side, of course, is here's this young man who for no reason, I mean, it was a totally random instance in this case, the Hamas dug a tunnel under the fence surrounding Gaza and came out of the tunnel, you know, and surprised an Israeli army unit which was there protecting the fence, and killed two soldiers. I think it was two or three soldiers were killed, and Gilad Shalit was kidnapped. They didn't know who he is. They don't know what kind of a person he is. In all likelihood, he never has fired a gun in anger at anybody. He just happened to be there, a totally random event. He could have been one of those killed, and one of the other who were killed could be the one kidnapped. it's to me it's so really ugly in when it comes to the, in terms of personal responsibility and individuality and respect for the individual. It totally defies those concepts. I mean, they go right out the window. It doesn't matter who you are. If you just b'mikre, by happenstance, happen to be there, boom, you're a prisoner. That's what happened to the two guys in that were kidnapped by Hezbollah. And that same attack, several soldiers were killed. If they had been killed in the attack, the other soldiers could have been kidnapped. It really, that's why it's kidnapping. It's not taking of a prisoner in the normal terms of military, of a prisoner of war. For one, prisoner of war is allowed by the Geneva Convention to be visited by the Red Cross, and he's allowed to have letters, and he's allowed. There's a list of terms, conditions under which a prisoner of war is entitled. He's entitled to certain minimal humane conditions, even under Islamic law, as a matter of fact. But in this case, in Red Cross law, he's entitled to a Red Cross visit. He's entitled to medical visits. He's entitled to books. He's entitled to exercise. He's entitled to food, and so on and so forth. We have no idea what of those entitlements Gilad Shalit is receiving, or if any of them. It could well be he's receiving none of them. He has no exercise time. He has no access to reading. He certainly has not been seen by the Red Cross, neither by his parents. We remember when I was a child, it was the famous one was name, rank, and serial number, right? You get captured by the enemy. That's all you need to say is your name, rank, and serial number, and you're finished. You don't have to provide any more information. They, on the other hand, the people who capture you, are required to provide you with, as I've said, decent living, medical, food, Red Cross visits, packages, letters from home. So we have here a complete disregard for human rights, for legal rights, for the Geneva Convention, and so on and so forth. And it should be pointed out that the people that Hamas is trying to get back, the prisoners that Israel holds, all of them, as far as I know, have been arrested, arraigned, tried by a court, and proven guilty and sentenced. But at least from a basic, they're not random. They're not people who were picked up off the street just because we could, so that we captured them. These are especially those that they want back. Now, I know at the time that Gilad Shalit was kidnapped, Israel essentially kidnapped several Hamas members of parliament, hoping to hold them in as a ransom, saying, okay, we have your secretary of this and minister of that, and, you know, we would like to exchange him for Gilad Shalit. And so, A, they know who they are. B, I believe they have visiting rights. They have television rights. Many of them even receive advanced degrees through the Israeli Open University system. Well, they're not in there by themselves. It's not like all these people are in solitary confinement. All of them are in a prison with other prisoners and being taken care of alongside of other prisoners and so on. So they have a social life. They're not just totally isolated. I don't know if you remember, but there was in Lebanon a number of years ago during the Lebanese Civil War, there were all kinds of Westerners who were kidnapped. Terry White, who was the representative of the Archbishop of Canterbury, and several very well-known journalists and so on, were just taken away. So the Shalit family, which is a very sympathetic family, has been organizing and publicizing and has drawn many other Israelis into the struggle for his release, demanding that the government do whatever Hamas is demanding, give whatever prisoners, whatever criminals to Hamas in order to have Gilad Shalit returned. This, we've been seeing this on television now for, well, almost 3 years that he's been gone. But what happened just recently, when the government was about to change, there was this very strong feeling on the part of the Shalit family and those who supported them that, seeing as this all had happened on Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's watch, as they say, that he was the responsible party, and that before he left office, the maximum effort should be made to force him, to push him, to stimulate him to doing whatever was necessary to bring Gilad Shalit back. So they put up a tent right across from his official residence at the top of Azza Street, for people who know Jerusalem, next to Terra Sancta, and they have a they've had a like a sign up which they change every day. How many days he's been away? At the point where this demonstration took place, it was 990 some odd days, and they were talking about on the radio every day. They'd say this is the 453 days and nights, and I thought the adding the and nights was very poignant, because how much more alone can you be than also it being at night? We don't even know if he has electricity or lights where he is. Could be in the pitch black dark somewhere. And then across the street from them, which is really what was the unusual part, were a group of Israelis who felt that the government should not give whatever is being asked of them, and that the government should... They didn't have an answer, as we'll hear, I think, in the interviews I conducted. It's not like they know what should be done. They're just very committed to what they feel should not be done, which is to go along with, to satisfy Hamas by releasing all these 400 and some odd people who've been sentenced to multiple life sentences for murder. And this is their strong feelings. There were several of the people who were there in sympathy, and there were a number of people we talked to who were there having lost loved ones. One gentleman who lost a daughter. There was, and I don't remember the other one. What is so striking, partly so striking, I think it's a moral issue that no other group of people have to deal with. In most cases, for instance, the American Vietnam veterans, they were legitimate prisoners of war, captured by the enemy, the North Vietnamese. They were not treated particularly well, but I think they had the minimum United Nations visits, letters from home, people knew where they were, people knew they were alive, and it was like in a mass. The Vietnamese had, I don't even know how many, but quite a number of American prisoners, and the American government was the agency that arranged for their release. I don't know if America had Vietnamese prisoners that they gave in return, and if they did, certainly those Vietnamese did not threaten Americans. Everything was very far away. The same, I think, would be true now in Iraq or in Afghanistan. And here it's all, you know, it's like all across the street. It's like right here. The prisoners that were released, they say that 40% of the prisoners that have been released in the last prisoner release arrangements, which began at least 15 or 20 years ago, 40% of them return as terrorists, even though they sign a paper saying that they won't, which obviously is not profoundly meaningful, and come back and kill more people. So to save one life, is it worth putting hundreds of lives in jeopardy or tens of lives in jeopardy? And it's a very direct, it's not like something abstract, and it's not something far away, and it's not something we're talking about, something that may happen in years. We're talking about things that happen right here, pretty much right now. And then I went across the street and talked to the people who were in the Gilad Shalit demonstration. And mostly the people who were most enthusiastic were these young little girls, 15, 16-year-old. Lots of groups came, organized groups from schools, youth movements. And there's, on their part too, there's not a lot of depth, not a lot of real understanding of what are the consequences of this. There's only, we want him home, we want him now, and anything and everything. So really in both groups, are the level of the discourse is rather shallow, and neither group, and I don't think anybody, not here, not in any other place on the planet, have a real responsible answer to this dilemma.
And he's still not back. Let's listen to the voices of the people from both sides.
I'm here at the top of Azza Street in downtown Jerusalem, just outside of downtown Jerusalem, next to the official home of the Prime Minister. Today there is a continuation of an incredibly intense demonstration. On the one side of the street, on the southern side of the street, is a tent set up for the family of Gilad Shalit, who was kidnapped 996 days ago by Hamas and disappeared into Gaza
no word, no Red Cross visits, nothing. There's no form of communication whatsoever. His family and those who are supporting them, probably a clear majority of the country, are demanding that the government make a deal with Hamas, which everybody knows involves the release of convicted terrorists, jailed and convicted terrorists. On here on the north side of the street, where I'm standing, are people who are protesting or who are present under a sign that says, "Don't free terrorists." A terror victim organization and terror victim families. Their main contention is that by freeing terrorists now, there will be more victim families. And some of the victim families here, some of those who are here, are parents of children who were killed by terrorists who were freed in previous exchanges. Of course, there's a lot of media and a number of different people. It's not totally obvious who is who. In Hebrew it says, "Al tishachraru mechablim," do not release terrorists. It's difficult to know if there's who here is a... Excuse me, are you part of this? Are you part of... Do you speak English?
Yes. We are. We're English.
Are you part of here? A part
yes,
of this group?
We are definitely part of here.
Can you tell me why you're here?
Why we're here? Because we believe that this policy of reward and appeasement is going absolutely nowhere. And for every one terrorist who is released, you've got potentially 10 or more people who are going to die from our people. And that's why we're here. We have had two boys in the army. I had one boy in Lebanon, another one in Givati down near Gaza. And believe me, Baruch Hashem, nothing happened to them. It could have, but it didn't. We were blessed. But my heart goes out to this Shalit family, but we believe that this is going beyond one person. This is the safety of the country, and this is wrong. So that's why we're here. And we believe there are a lot of Anglos like us. When I say Anglos, we are from Australia, right? And we've been here quite a while in Jerusalem, and we know an awful lot of people like us who probably think very much the same way, but they're not so young too, and they find it a bit of a hardship to walk and sit here till all hours. But believe me, they are certainly with this side of the road.
Do you have anything to add, sir? Your wife was very eloquent.
Look, I'm joining my wife with this. Only one thing I have to say, that it doesn't make any sense. Because these people, after they murdered, they are sentenced to years and to life. And they laugh. Why? Because they know that in a few years' time they will be let out. And it's a sort of a system of a turn door, or a revolving door. They go in, they go out. They go in, they go out. And it doesn't stop. So somebody has to have some sense and says, all right, we'll stop here and that's it. And that's what I think. The murderer shouldn't be let go.
Thank you very much. Well, there I'd like to speak to somebody whose English is maybe a little accented on the side of the Hebrew. Uh-huh. And are you part of the demonstration? And do you speak English? Can you explain why you're here?
Well, I'm here because I feel for Gilad Shalit, and I feel for all the people who have given their lives and lost their lives by the terrorism that we're plagued with in Israel. And we have seen that freeing terrorists does not ensure our safety. It does not promote our safety. It increases terrorism. And as everyone in Israel is praying for the release of Gilad Shalit, we have to be, as a nation, do what is good for us as a people and make sure that terrorists are locked up and the key is thrown away.
Thank you very much. Have you had a personal encounter with this? Do you have family members or someone who was injured?
Thank God I have not, but I have spoken to a woman standing next to me who is praying for Gilad Shalit's release because she doesn't want him to come home, get married like her son did, and get blown up in a cafe.
It is interesting, if not ironic, that directly across the street from both of these demonstrations is a restaurant which was known as a Moment Restaurant. Before that, it was a pizza place. It's had a long history of names. And when it was Moment Restaurant, there was a terrorist attack here in which a number of people were killed. I'm going to go across here and see if the memorial plaque mentions when and how many people were killed here. It was in 02, 10 names. The traffic here does not have a lot of patience, although there isn't really that much horn blowing. But between the television cameras and the buses and the cars, and of course everybody slows down, and the people involved in the demonstrations who are spilling into the street, it's a very busy place. Most people being interviewed here, of course, are being interviewed in Hebrew. And to find, so far we've spoken with four people who were quite, whose voices are very much Anglo voices. We'll see if we can find somebody with a genuine, authentic Hebrew accent. Maybe we have one here. Excuse me, do you speak English? Can you explain what you're doing here?
Oh, I'm a victim of terror. My son was killed in a bombing attack in Haifa in the restaurant Maxim. My grandson was severely wounded. I received a shrapnel in his head. So he was in a very bad condition. Nobody believed he will live. And thanks God, now he lives. But, you know, he's a cripple. He needs all the time help from anybody. The rehabilitation takes a lot of time, you know. And who knows how many years. My son was murdered by a Palestinian woman that one of the Palestinian terrorists sent her, but he was released in another deal. So I'm against the deals. Why to do deals if they go after they are freed, they go and makes another bombing attack? Why to do it? I want very much that Gilad Shalit will come. I, like a mother, I feel what she feels. I don't want to change places, you know. I don't want to be instead of her. But I don't want her to be instead of me. And what I'm doing here is that she will not be instead of me. And nobody here will be instead of me.
Thank you very much. Let's try another one.
Excuse me, do you speak English? Are you part of this demonstration? Can you explain why you're here? After you swallow your lunch?
To eat in order to be a little bit rational. Actually, we're part of the group that initiated all this campaign against the release of the 1,450 terrorists. And the Hamad made a very good brain wash to the Israeli public that this is the only way to release the abducted soldier. And we are here to say to the government, there are other ways, other means to get the soldiers back. And don't go to the easy solution. We have to be determined, consistent, and then we have the means to bring this Gilad Shalit back home in a peaceful way.
How do you think that can be done?
Well, there are some things like... If Israel would not transfer one shekel to the Hamas, I think this will be a good leverage. Other leverage, I think, is that Israel will reduce all the benefits that all the imprisoned have here in Israel. And I'm not talking about something against the Geneva Convention. I'm talking within the Geneva Convention. And there are lots of other ways. And I'm... The reason I'm here is because I lost my daughter in a terror attack. And this is also what made me start and speak. It happened 6 years ago and 12 days in Haifa. And after what I have experienced, and it happened to me, as most of the Israeli people say, well, it won't happen to me. It did happen to me. If it happened to me, it can happen to anyone. And therefore, I'm here to strengthen the government and also the future government not to give up and release those terrorists.
By the way, how old was your daughter?
Tal was 17 and 9 months old. She was a senior. She was getting ready for the prom. And fortunately, her friends called her, put her on the bus to go to the different section of town, because at the time, and we tend to forget, it was dangerous to ride buses. So, and unfortunately, she was on that bus, and she never came home.
Thank you very much. Did she like camels?
She liked. If you go into the website, you'll see she loved camels. And after she was killed, I found in her diary a small camel, which I'm using as a symbol to her, in her memory. And it's in her website. And what I launched 2 years ago is a campaign, Color Tal's Camel. It's a camel she did not finish to paint. I ask the people over the internet to color the camel and send it back. Actually, after 5 years, and my goal was to reach 1,826 camels, because this was exactly the days that Tal wasn't with us. And for my good surprise, there was a tremendous response. And right now, I have over 5,700 camels in the website. So you are invited to color a camel and also share it with other people.
Thank you. By the way, you don't look old enough to have a 17-year-old daughter.
1 year old and 10 months.
The business card he gave me, the card he gave me with the website, shows a smiling, long, red-headed young woman. And the website is tal-smile.com. And here on the other side of the street, far more people. Much more popular, and as Tal's father said, almost an easier solution to the issue is to allow the terrorists to go free and to receive in return the young man who was kidnapped. As I said, the sign up here indicates that he's been in captivity for 996 days. And there was somebody on the radio who used to count the days and would add 996 days and nights. And I always felt that the idea that this young man had to spend his nights, almost 1,000 nights, in an obviously very uncomfortable situation, was very poignant for me. Just last night, the representatives of the government who had been in Egypt trying to work out a deal returned. I actually haven't heard the news since then, but the word in the newspaper that I read this morning was that there was no deal. And that was, last night, was considered the last possible, the final negotiation. A lot of young people. A lot of them will soon find themselves in the army and could well find themselves in the same situation. לא, זה נראה כמו טלוויזיה?
מה זה?
זה רדיו. אתם יודעים מה זה רדיו?
בטח, אנחנו רוצים...
לדבר.
באנגלית?
לא, בעברית.
מה את היית אומרת?
שאנחנו מקווים שגלעד יחזור אלינו.
בלי פגיעות.
אנחנו חושבים שזה אפשרי שאחרי כמעט 1,000 ימים יכול להיות שלא יהיו פגיעות?
אנחנו רוצים שגלעד שליט יחזור,
ואנחנו מתפללים שהוא יחזור, ואנחנו מאמינים שהוא חי.
כן, כולנו מקווים ומאמינים.
Everyone believes that Gilad is alive and everybody would like him to come back. מה אתה אומר?
מקווים שאלוהים שומר עליו.
And this young lady hopes that God has protected him. תודה רבה לכם. Part of the reason that there's so many people here, the push, is for this to be taken care of and done before the new government comes into office. There are thoughts that the right-wing government will be less sympathetic to this idea, to the idea of releasing all these terrorists, and will have less responsibility because young Shalit was kidnapped during the government on the watch of, during the period of responsibility of Ehud Olmert, who is about to be relieved of all that responsibility. So there's a real feeling that now, in these days, is the final chance to do the job correctly.